Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago, and it is 6:02, 2 minutes after 6 p.m. in the city of Chicago. Central Standard Time, 302-347-8571762. That's the George Wilder Jr. Show. And thank you for being here, folks. Thank you for listening. I mean, if you got any gripes about the show, don't be afraid to, let me know, because if something's going wrong, if something's not right, don't be afraid to, don't be apprehensive of letting the George Wilder Jr. Show know that, because we are always in the process of making the show a better. And it's all about making the world a better place. It's a mess, but we're still going to try and do the best we can on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you so much for being here. It is, I believe it's about 50-something degrees in the city of Chicago. It still feels like springtime. To me, it's not winter. And maybe we have bypassed winter for the season. Maybe we have in the city of Chicago. And it is just great, folks. No rain, no snow. Clear. Sometimes it's sunny. And officially, it's still winter. We've had the same kind of weather in February. Now, in January, in some parts of 2016, we had a few hiccups. There was snow. It was freezing cold, but basically it's been So far, the majority of the winners, 75% to 80% of the winner in the city of Chicago, there have been none. And I'm not complaining. I am not complaining one bit, but it's weird. It is weird. It's strange. And it's kind of scary because I've said it so many times that why we're having so much nice weather here in the city of Chicago is that we are being set up for the kill. Because I do think down the road, it's going to be really nasty with snow and rain and ice and storms because we haven't had them. The East Coast, the West Coast, you know, I mean, winters never left those parts of the country. But, you know, in the city of Chicago, we're in the Midwest, so we're near north, and it's just been awesome. Awesome, totally awesome. And I do wish it's same way where you are, whether you like winter, cold, or spring or summer. If it's awesome where you are, then you know it should be that's great. That's wonderful. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. They have the Chicago Bears, the football team, which is 3-13. That means that they've won 3 games and lost 13 of the 16 games per season, and Jay Cutler has been let go, the numero uno quarterback. He's been like 8 years, and you know what, I applaud the change, because lately Jay Cutler has not been Jay Cutler, and he's been let go by the Chicago Bears. And I'm thinking they have either signed another quarterback or they will be signing another quarterback. And they've let him go. He's a free agent now. That means he can sign with any team he wants to sign with. I'm pretty sure the Chicago Bears had to probably eat his contract. But, you know, but the Bears are just, I mean, for the 2016 season, they were just awful. There's no doubt about it. I can't even put it in a mildly. I can't even put this mildly. They stunk. And Jay Cutler was a part of it. You know, he was a part of it. I can't put the entire 2016 debacle on Jay Cutler. You know, so, but it was in its entirety for the Bears organization, it was a mess. It was a mess. So they finally, and I was saying at the end of the season for the Bears last year, that they have to let Jay Cutler go. 8 years and no playoff berth, no Super Bowl, not enough wins to do anything. 8 years. There was times when I used to say that Jay Cutler was a great quarterback. I was on his side because I felt that actually his offensive line wasn't giving him enough protection. You know, even when he gets the protection, he still throws badly. And finally, they are seeing the writing on the wall, and they're starting to let him go. So, you know, it's heartbreaking, but it's something that had to happen. You know, Cutler will be remembered. He will be remembered as a lightning rod figure in Chicago, but he brought stability to a position that had troubled the Bears for years. He followed quarterback Kyle Orton, Brian Greasy. These are some of the former quarterbacks. He followed these people. Kyle Orton, Brian Greasy, Rex Grossman, Chad Hutchison, Cornell Stewart, and Jim Miller, and also Shane Matthews, okay, among plenty of others. In other words, the Bears have had plenty of quarterbacks. They were never stable at the quarterback position until they drafted Cutler. And we've had Cutler, like I said, for 8 years, and he has virtually done nothing. We've had Lovie Smith as coach of the Bears for 6 years, and about I think 2 or 3 of those years, Lovie at least had taken the Bears to the playoffs. That was it. So. And this coach they have now, I believe his name is John Fox, I think it is. And I think they need to let him go. You know, I mean, you really got to build the Bears up from bottom to the top. But anyway, Jay Cutler is out. Cutler's best season came in 2010. It ended with a disappointment in the playoffs. And 2010, I believe that was when Lovie Smith was the coach of the Bears. And that was it. And then 2010, that was 7 years ago, seven years ago. So it's the guaranteed portions of Cutler's seven-year extension, which he signed under former general manager Phil Emery in 2014, have been paid. Yeah, they have eaten portions of his contract to get rid of it, period. Releasing Cutler only will result in a $2 million salary cap hit on the Bears' books for 2017. That's due to the remaining amount of $5 million signing bonus. So he's pretty good in the money area, you know. ESPN was the first to report the news about Cutler. It doesn't matter. I mean, the Bears need to rebuild, folks. All right, well, you listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show. This is not a sports talking show. I barely know enough about sports to even think about being a sportscaster. But, you know, you got a lot of people out there who are. You got a lot of people on Block Talk Radio doing sports shows. That's great. That's wonderful. This is I consider this a variety show on a lot of things. I know on the marquee it says politics, but basically we can talk about anything we want to talk about on the George Wilder Jr. Show. So we're on from Monday through Thursday, 6 o'clock to 7:30 or 8 o'clock. Depends on how the show goes. And my guest today, touring theater company with Clyde P. Riddlesbrode. Clyde P. Riddlesbrode. That should be interesting. And that's my guest, Clyde P. Riddlebrode. And somehow that name ring a bell. It seems like I've read it somewhere before. But, you know, he's going to tell us what it's about. It's he may be an actor or a producer or something like that. He's going to let us know. He's going to let us know what we do, what he does. I can't tell you that because I want it to be a surprise to you. Okay. That's, you know, if he doesn't have any last minute, if there's not any last minute changes on his side of the aisle, he should be here. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's Jay Cutler is on the trading block. He's out of here. He is totally out of here. And I wish him a lot of luck wherever he goes. I believe he's around 35, 36, something like that. I could be wrong. But anyway, I wish him a lot of luck on wherever he winds up. Tony Romo, quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, is being let go. They've got rid of him, the period. You know, just like they've gotten rid of Jay Cutler. And it should be a new era for the Bears. But that doesn't mean the Bears are going to win anything next year, next season. We have to wait and see. But one of the things I want to mention about the Bears before I get off this subject, you know, the Bears are 3-13. They've won three games all season, and they lost 13 of a 16-game season. They lost 13 games, won three. And the Bears management, they had the nerve of this totally, totally rotten team, the nerve to raise ticket prices. Can you imagine that? This team has lost almost every damn game, and then the Bears have the nerve to raise the ticket prices. The last two or three games of the season of 2016 for the Bears, there were hardly any fans in the stands. Nobody basically came to the games at Soldier Field because of the Bears' performance. I mean, if you weren't at Soldier Field, you can see it all on television where there was the last two or three games, there was no fans attending the game because of the Bears' lackluster performances. And these guys raise the ticket prices. Now, I'm a Bears fan. But I would not go to a Bears game unless the Chicago Bears football team, unless the Chicago Bears prove themselves to me that they're worthy of my money. I'm not going to go sit in a stadium and watch my team get slaughtered each and every weekend, each and every Sunday. That's a waste of money, you know. So I just think it's that it was just dumb for the Bears to raise their ticket prices on a team, on a lackluster team who wound up being last in their division. I don't know. These people are crazy or something or other. The only time you raise ticket prices, if you do raise them, is when your team is performing well. If your team has gone to the playoffs, and especially if your team has gone to the Super Bowl, you don't raise ticket prices when you're the worst team, one of the worst teams in the NFL, and nobody's going to the game. Nobody cares about the game. Nobody's watching the game. I mean, are you nuts? What you do is you go down on the ticket prices. And you make more money going down on the ticket prices than you will going up on the ticket prices. Somebody ought to tell the business managers for the business managers for the Bears just what I've just said. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting straight up out of Chicago. We will be right back. We're going to do a musical break here, folks. All right, House Republicans plow ahead with their effort to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. I'm going to tell you something. The Republicans hate Obama so much, they don't even want him to have a legacy. They don't want you to even remember what he's done. They have undid Obama so badly, it's shameful. And I just can't understand why Obama will not come out and say something about this. I'm pretty sure he doesn't like it. They have lied on him about wiretapping Trump Tower. There is no proof. I mean, he will not provide it. So I'm assuming there's no proof. There's no evidence. He totally lied on Obama. He lied on Obama about releasing prisoners from Gitmo. That's a total lie. And now they're dismantling Obama, and they're talking about him like he's trash or garbage. And this guy will not come out and defend himself. He talks through spokesmen and other people. But and then if he says something, he'll say it away from the camera. Obama needs to come out and protect himself, protect his legacy, and defend his presidency, defend everything that he's done. for this country for 8 years and talk about the things he has not done and the things he wished he could have done. But he will not. He's just somewhere in hiding. I always thought he was hiding in the White House when he was there, but he will not come out and say anything. Case in point, I mean, I remember, and you also too, Republicans and racists, they would say nasty things about Michelle Obama. And Obama would not go to her rescue to defend her. Bill Clinton, whenever somebody said something derogatory about Hillary, he was out there in front of the camera jumping on those person who said negative things about her, Hillary, by, you know, like as talking about her looks. But Obama has never, ever defended his wife. And it could be Michelle's problem because it should, excuse me, it could be Michelle that's trying to tell him to stay above the fray. You want to stay above the fray. But if you, with the Republicans, staying above the fray is not something you should do. I mean, I always thought you fight fire with fire. These guys coming after you, they're in the gutter. You got to get in the gutter with them, or whatever they throw at you, even if it's lies, is going to stick. Because you got a lot of people out here who's going to believe that garbage. Obama doesn't come out here forcefully and defend. We need a leader, but it's not. Some people were saying that maybe Obama could be a great ex-president. That doesn't seem like it's going to happen because we're not hearing from him. And Hillary's coming out. You got Bernie Sanders saying things against this administration. You got Hillary. You got a lot of senators and representatives saying things against this administration. Barack Obama is not saying a thing. Not a thing. He came out and said that Trump was basically telling falsehoods about Obama wiretapping one of his buildings. Basically, he said that behind the cameras. You know, we need to hear him say it in front of the cameras, and we need for him to be tough and loud like the Republicans. The Republicans win by being tough, loud, and lying. This is how they win. And another reason to why they win, probably the biggest, is that people do not get their butts out there and vote like they should. Or they don't vote down the ticket like they should. Yeah, Hillary got 3 million votes in the popular vote. But you didn't vote for your representative. You didn't vote for your senator. You didn't vote for your Democratic governor. You just didn't. Because if you did vote for your Democratic senator or your Democratic representative in Congress, it would not be controlled by the Republicans. The Republicans don't want you to vote. They try to suppress your vote. Yeah, I think a lot of you did vote, but you didn't vote straight down the ticket. You didn't vote for a representative. You didn't vote for your senator, a Democratic or independent. And that's how the Republicans are controlling everything. And especially in a lot of these states where they're Republican controlled by governors, Republican governors in a lot of these states, that tells you right then and there, you didn't vote in a lot of these states. That's why you got these Republican governors wreaking havoc on the middle class and the poor. You didn't vote, but still in all, folks, you can always go out and vote. Coming November 2017 for the control of Congress. You can get them out of there, you know, vote them out. And by the looks of some of these town halls, some of these Republican town halls, their constituency, it looks like there's going to be some changes. Yeah, I just love watching these town halls where these folks show up, the voters show up, and their Republican representative or senator show up, and these folks just jump right into these guys' ass. I mean, and girls. And these politicians think they're so above it all. They think they're so God-given to the America and the United States that they can't be, you know, they can't be yelled at. They can't be talked down to. They work for nobody. You know, but they work for us. They are employed by us. They get paid from our tax dollars. They work for us, but yet they are doing things for themselves and their party and their party bosses instead of doing what we want them to do. They're following their own voices in their own head. You know, a lot of people said, don't mess with Obamacare. A lot of those, their constituents said the same thing, but they're messing with Obamacare and they get yelled at. They get yelled at and they get scoriated by the people who put their asses in office and they don't like it because they think they're so above it all because they're politicians. They act as if everything that comes out of their mouth, we are supposed to believe, take it and like it. No, 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 no. That's not going to happen. We voted for you. We put your ass there. We are your bosses. We are paying you. We give you great health care. But you want to take away our health care or make health care a lot harder for us. And that's basically what some of these people at these town halls are saying. And the Republicans who are avoiding these town halls, giving all kind of weak excuses for not going to their town hall and talking to their constituency face to face, they should be fired. They should be voted straight out of office for avoiding the people who put their asses in office and not doing what those people want them to do. This is a democracy. You know, they should be voted straight the hell out. But I will say this, come November, I mean, not even November, maybe later on this year, it's going to be a lot of people running against these people because they know that these seats in Congress are going to be vulnerable. So each and every one of these folks who do not show up at their town hall meetings, giving some kind of weak ass excuse, you're going to have a lot of people running for your job in November 2018, the midterms. There's going to be a lot of people. They're going to have a lot of opponents, and this is going to make it hard for them to win. I mean, if you want to win, if you want to get votes and get in Congress, you got to do what your constituents say you're going to do. You got to keep your promises. You cannot follow the party. They didn't put you in. They didn't vote you in. The people of that state, of that district, or whatever, voted for you. Not the party bosses. They didn't vote for you. But a lot of these folks in Congress, they're adhered, especially the Republicans, they are adhering to their party bosses. They vote the way the party bosses want them to vote, not the way the people want them to vote. And that's wrong. But the Republicans, they wipe their butts with the Constitution. They don't give a damn. Donald Trump, he's president of the United States. It's forbidden for him to collect money or take gifts while being a sitting politician in the White House. But he's doing it anyway. He's doing it. His staff is getting away with trying to sell his products on air. This is wrong. This is totally wrong. But nothing is being done about it because the Republicans control everything. And they like what Donald Trump is doing. They may not like him personally, but they like what he's doing. They're using Donald Trump. I think they're using him in order to get what they want, get the cuts that they want, dismantle Obamacare. They're using him, I think. And a lot of people are just sitting back calling Donald Trump a clown, you know, and they're laughing at the United States. Well, I mean, we have lost our standing in the world because of these Republicans and Donald Trump. But these people don't care. They don't give a damn. You know, I mean, hey, wow, they are adhering to their party bosses. This group of politicians are adhering to their party bosses. And I hope their constituency, the people who put them in office, I hope they just vote these fools out on their asses. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We've been talking about a lot of things here, folks, especially the Republicans repealing Obamacare. you know, making it, they're making it worse, but they're lying and spinning about it's the best thing that ever happened. Give me a break. The Republicans don't never do anything that's best for America. That's just them lying to their base or something or other. But we here with level headedness knows that that's not true. That's not true. That's not true. So these lawmakers, they have upended Obama's legacy. He doesn't have a legacy. They've destroyed it. And yet Obama will not come out and say anything. If it was me, boy, I'd be out there, you low down scoundrels. You know, Obama will not come out and say anything. He's trying to keep above the fray, but the fray is drowning him. He must say something, but I don't think he will. Even in, I mean, even sometimes during his presidency, I'm saying the same thing I was saying then. Obama, where are you? Where are you? He's a good, I mean, when he gives a speech, it's a great speech. And I've said for many years, it's a great sounding speech. He delivers it well. He projects himself well, but it's just talk. After it's over, you wind up saying, wow, sounds good, but it's just talk. And that's what he needs to do now. He needs to just talk, you know, because the Republicans are just screwing him all over the place as if he was the worst president ever. And that's not true. I don't think he was the best. I don't think he came ever to being great, but he's not the worst. The person we have in office now who doesn't know what he's doing or childish, bullyish, liar, pathological liar, groper. This guy is the worst president of the United States. Donald Trump doesn't know what he's doing. He might know a little bit more than what he did when he first took office, but he doesn't know what he's doing. And they're saying that the speech he gave a couple of weeks ago was a great speech. He came presidential. He was reading a teleprompter and he was reading it in a low voice. Basically, some of the things that he was trying to do he's going to do them anyway. It wasn't a great speech. He just read it. He read words. I was surprised that he could read, but because a lot of his tweets that he's tweeting out, a lot of that stuff is misspelled. You know, it's misspelled. The White House is always putting something out that's misspelled or grammatically incorrect somewhat. You know, but wow. And they're trying to make Obama look like he's the worst president ever. Give me a break. Of course, he's not the greatest president in the world. I don't think he deserves to have a street named after him. I don't. You know, that's me. I mean, the city council may think otherwise. You know, but for him, but for Obama to let the Republicans kick him while he's down or while he's out of office is just totally unfair. Then other people, if Obama doesn't come out and speak up for himself, other people have to come out and kind of speak up for him. But that's not right. But I know I'm just wasting my time, wasting my breath. And but I'm going on with the show. And I wish he would come out and say something. I really do about what's going on. You know, I wish he would come out and take a leadership role in what's going on because he has a mega microphone. He can do this. He can do this. He can help us take this country back from these thugs in the White House. I want him to do that. Even some in the media are saying, where is Obama? Where is Obama? We need Obama. We need somebody out there. Okay, we've got Bernie Sanders. He's out there fighting the good fight. Hillary Clinton will be fighting the good fight. She's trying to get over her election loss. I understand it, but she's out there fighting the good fight. You got other senators and representatives out here fighting against these asshole Republicans in office who are controlling everything. But we need Obama. People still love him, regardless of some of his failures. People still love him, and compared to Trump, they totally admire this man. They want to name streets after him. They want to name libraries after him. They want to name their little kids, their infants after him. So he needs to come out and say something, especially I think he needs to come out and defend himself on a lot of this lying and BS that's going on behind his back. Because like I said before, the Republicans are just trying to rip his legacy apart. And he's just as quiet as a mouse. And a lot of us don't think he should be as quiet as a mouse. Come out here and be forceful. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. We're going to do this little short thing, and we will be back if I can find it. Okay, here we go. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's been fun, folks. It's always fun. All right, let's go here. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead. I can hear you breathing. Go right ahead.
Oh, is that somebody there? Hello,
yeah,
this is Ryan.
Huh?
You guys had an appointment for me to call up right about now. I'm Clyde P. Riddlesbrood.
All right, I got you right here, man. I got you right here on my screen here, Clyde P. Riddlesbrood. Okay, I had a it's kind of a weird name, but it's you can pronounce it if you break it up into syllables. Yeah, and you're gonna be talking about touring theater company.
That's right. We're based out of New Jersey, but we operate all over New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, sometimes a little bit farther. And we do a lot of murder mystery shows and dinner theater shows all over the place. It's a lot of fun.
Wow. I bet it's a lot of fun. So can you give my audience a little bit of your bio and things like that? Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the company.
Sure, certainly. Like, my name is Clyde, and I founded the company in 2000. And so this is our 17th year. We're very proud. As I said before, we specialize in doing touring entertainment shows like murder mysteries and dinner theater.
Yeah.
All very comical, very audience interactive. So we're very happy. We do about 100 shows a year, traveling to restaurants,
wow,
banquet facilities all over. Probably the most important thing we do is we do a lot of private events. So like fundraisers, company parties, things like that. People are looking for something fun and they give us a call and we drive over and entertain their group.
Oh, wow, man, that sounds great. So you come with a lot of acting experience, comedy and this type of thing.
Oh, sure. I've worked in dinner theater and theater in general for my whole life, ever since I was a kid. You know, my mother is a jazz musician. My father owned a theater. So I pretty much spent my whole life sitting in an audience waiting for them to get done their gigs.
Okay. Are you an author? Have you written anything?
Yes, I have. We've written a really cool book that I think your readers might be interested in, especially if they like, you know, fantasy and maybe even a little bit of gothic horror in there. The book is entitled it's entitled The Greatest Brochure in the World, which is a little unusual because the whole book, it pretends to be a brochure that you pick up and then you discover it's actually some, you know, portal into another crazy world. So it's kind of like a very unusual way to put a story together.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure it's pretty dynamic. How is what's the reaction like from this book, this brochure?
Sure. Well, of course, the first thing that people always say is, wow, it's exceedingly unique. I would have never thought I would have seen anything quite like that. We also give it away at a lot of our murder mystery shows as a prize.
Mm-hmm.
So people get a kick out of reading it there. It also is just unusual because for a business, every business has a brochure. But, you know, we rewrote an entire novel to be our brochure. You know, so people have, you know. That's why we call it the greatest brochure in the world.
Wow. And it, and this brochure, this novel, it tells people all about your touring theater company.
In general, yes. I mean, imagine imagine if you had a little hoagie shop in your town and the owners decided to write the entire Harry Potter series of books and you had to go to that hoagie shop in order to get to Hogwarts. So that was kind of the idea. It's like, imagine if an entire fantasy realm was written around one little small business. So that's kind of what we did. We made this entire fantasy world centralized around the theater company.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Have you guys done any television?
No television or anything like that. Mostly we do, you know, we do some main stage shows, and we also work around in New York quite a bit. We do quite a few shows, but no TV. Although some of our actors, you know, they've been in some, you know, extras and stuff like that in different movies.
So are you participating on writing another book, or, you know, on this company, or just in general?
Well, I have a couple ideas. You know, you're always thinking creatively, thinking of interesting ideas to write in the future. So I have a couple things bubbling up, but nothing that's going to happen in the near future. The one thing we're very excited about is we have a new show called Harkin. It's actually called A Game of Phones, where everybody in the audience actually, they use their cell phone to actually choose where they want to go in the show. So it's like a video game and a theater show all put together in one. It's going to be pretty cool.
You sound like you really enjoy what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's better than a real job. Let me put it that way.
I love what I'm doing right here. Radio hosting is better than a real job. And you tell yourself all the time, you know, it's a sin to be getting paid money to do what you love doing, you know.
Of course.
And you just have to do what you love. And I tell people that all the time, do what you love, enjoy what you're doing, get paid to do what you love doing, you know, because this is basically a show on motivation. And how would you motivate somebody? How would somebody get into theater from the bottom?
Well, entertainment in general is a soul crushing enterprise, you know, so it is difficult, you know, somebody trying to get into theater, you know, especially if they have high dreams, like I want to get in the movies. Yeah, that's really, really, really tough. You know, you never want to say it can't happen.
Yeah, it is.
But, right. But you know, if somebody's really wanting to go in that direction, then really what they need to do is they need to get involved in their local community theater or murder mystery company or dinner theater, and they need to really get out there in front of an audience and work, you know? Get to know your craft, you know?
Right,
that's what's going to help you get there.
I always tell people if they want to get into theater, to try to get their acting chops while they're in school. You know, do school plays and stuff like that. That could be a leg up getting out there in the world of theater and television and entertainment and stuff like that. Start off in school doing small plays. Play a tree if you want on stage. But, you know, you get that resume going.
Yeah, but you know what? Even if you're not interested in being an actor, you know, getting involved in theater, especially with improv and stuff, can be a huge benefit. If you're a small business owner or an entrepreneur and you're trying to make it, you know, if an actor does anything well, it's sell. So if you're trying to sell your product or start your business, getting involved in theater is really going to help you become a strong, you know, magnet for other people that might want to get involved with you.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree because I think a lot of us at one time, we dreamed about theater. We dreamed about acting. And I've heard so many actors say, man, that if they had a choice between theater and making a movie, they chose theater because there's nothing like the reaction. There's nothing like that in your face audience reaction than so in a movie.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I wouldn't know how it feels to be in a movie. I certainly wouldn't mind trying it out. But but it is true that, you know, when you're in front of an audience and they're right there and you can reach out and touch them, you know, whenever you say a joke and they're laughing and you can see their energy, I mean, you can feel that. You don't have that kind of a, maybe a musician would, but, you know, for us actors that get up there every day, I mean, you really do possess, it's an amazing experience and connection you have with the audience.
That's I knew that from by being a public motivational speaker, because, you know, when you're on that stage, it's just that that audience is just so magic. And you may be a little nervous while you're up there, but that audience, after a while, I think that audience give you confidence in being try to be the best you can be while you're facing them on stage.
Especially if you know your material really well and you feel confident enough to be yourself. You know, if you're up there hemming and hawing and having a hard time remembering, you know, you're going to be off balance. You're going to have a hard time. You know, their eyes are going to be hitting you with bullets. But if you're up there and you really know what you're doing and you're strong, you know, your force field is going to come out of you and envelop them. You know, they're going to be in your field. And that's what we always try to attain. Get them swept up in your current, not the other way around.
Clyde P., can you tell us, give us some information on how we can get in touch with you and your show, if you have that type of information, and tell us where we can find your book?
Oh, we always have that information. Don't worry about that. The best way to reach out, is, of course, online on our website. And it's www.riddlesbrood.com. And I'll spell that real quick. It's RIDDLESBROOD. Or, of course, they can give us a call, 609-377-9125. Take a look at our Facebook. You can see all of our shows, pictures of all the actors, the audience having a great time. So if you're interested in having a private party or you want to have a really great, you know, entertaining event where people are going to be talking about it for weeks, give us a call. We'll fly out there.
Sounds great. Sounds wonderful. And what about the book? Can we find it on Amazon?
That's right. If you type in Riddles Brewed in Amazon or CreateSpace, you'll find it pretty quick because there's not too many other names like Riddles Brewed. Let me tell you that. So
you know what? You got that right.
You'll find. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure nobody had that name.
I wasn't sure when I was doing it, when I was doing the marquee, I wasn't sure if I had it spelled right, but I do. And I'm saying, wow, is this for real? You know, Riddles Brewed, you know, so, hey, is there anything? Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just giggling while you were talking. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is there anything else you would like to tell my audience or the, you know, the people out here about this touring company before we go?
You know, the only thing I'd like to say is, you know, this is our 17th year. I started it in 2000, and we've been working really hard to make this happen. And it takes a long time to make your dreams happen. But it is possible, and you can get there. You just can't quit, you know, just keep punching at that wall, and eventually you'll bust through it.
All right. Thanks, Clyde P. Riddles Brews, for being on the show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. All righty. That was exciting, wasn't it? All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back, folks, as soon as I can find something. Let's see what we got. Chuck Schumer, Bill Maher, Bernie Sanders. Oh, yeah. Sounds good. All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'd like to say thanks again to my guests. All right. We were talking about Trump and the Affordable Care Act and Chicago crime. Speaking of Chicago's crime, Trump, as Donald Trump has said many times, how horrific Chicago crime is. And he has said many times that he could stop the crime in 1 week. I mean, we're still waiting for him. But, you know, Trump is just talk. All of this was just talk. If you heard about Trump and his way he scourged Chicago. And because of his crime, his carnage, his the killings, the shootings, and all this kind of thing, we thought Trump was going to come to Chicago and talk to the gangbangers because he said he could stop it. He could stop it in 1 week, a few days. Oh, wow. This guy, only thing he did for that was to grandstand on the crime in Chicago. He was just grandstanding. The guy's not going to do anything. He's not going to come to Chicago because I think he and Mayor Emanuel, they have differences. So I don't think that's going to ever happen. We thought he was going to send the National Guard, even some federal agents. None of that happened. So Trump was just running off the mouth and lying again, as he always does. I think David Letterman was right. Trump lies about everything. Those are his words. And it's sad, but it's happening. I'm going to do this on Chicago's crime.
Do blacks commit more crimes than other races? The simple answer to this question is yes.
It was important for him to be briefed because the plan was to brief the president-elect as well, that these allegations had been circulating.
Pamela, hang on. We're going to go to Chicago, listen to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch talking about the civil rights investigation into the Chicago Police
Department. Former
because they
Attorney
are the
General.
Indispensable members of the team that led to this announcement today. Now, one of my highest priorities as Attorney General has been to ensure that every American enjoys police protection that is lawful, that is responsive and transparent. But as the events of recent years in Ferguson, in Baltimore, Cleveland, and many other cities have made clear, far too many Americans feel that they do not receive that kind of law enforcement. And far too many communities suffer because of painful divisions between police officers and citizens, divisions that make it significantly harder to reduce crime, to expand opportunity and to ensure that every American, including our police officers, can be safe and secure in their neighborhoods. Now, in December of 2015, as part of that work, I announced that the Department of Justice, after careful review and extensive consultation with state and local officials and community leaders, was opening an investigation into whether the Chicago Police Department had engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Constitution or federal statutory law. And for the past 13 months, our investigators have worked tirelessly to obtain a full and an accurate and an impartial picture of policing in Chicago. They have conducted hundreds of interviews with citizens, with officials, with officers. They have reviewed thousands of pages of documents. They have observed Chicago Police Department officers on the job. And on the basis of this exhaustive review, the Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Our investigation found that this pattern of practice is in no small part the result of severely deficient training procedures and accountability systems. Now, as my colleagues will explain in greater detail, CPD does not give its officers the training they need to do their jobs safely, effectively, and lawfully. It fails to properly collect and analyze data, including data on misconduct complaints and training deficiencies, and it does not adequately review use of force incidents to determine whether force was appropriate or lawful, or whether the use of force could have been avoided altogether. All of these issues are compounded by poor supervision and oversight, leading to low officer morale and an erosion in officer accountability. These are serious problems, and they bear serious consequences for all Chicagoans. As I said when I announced this investigation, the systems and policies that fail ordinary citizens also fail the vast majority of Chicago Police Department officers who risk their lives every day to serve and protect the people of Chicago. And during the course of our investigation, the department heard from countless officers who were themselves disillusioned and discouraged by strained trust, by inadequate training, poor oversight, and inattention to officer wellness and safety. Now, those officers are proud to wear the badge, but they recognize that they lack the support, both from the community and from the city, to properly do their jobs. And they understand that repairing trust with the communities that they serve will require difficult and meaningful reforms. Now, to Chicago's credit, the city has not been standing still since we announced our investigation at the end of 2015. Under the leadership of Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson, Chicago Police Department has taken a number of encouraging steps to improve oversight and to encourage community-oriented policing. But our report makes clear that there is still considerable work to be done, work that will require federal partnership and independent oversight. And that is why I am pleased to announce today that the Department of Justice and the City of Chicago have agreed to begin negotiations on an independently monitored, court-enforceable consent decree. And in the days ahead, we will continue speaking to local residents, local authorities, to officers, to ordinary citizens, to gather their perspectives about the challenges facing this city and the changes needed to address them. Now, of course, this announcement comes at a critical juncture for this proud city. Chicago is grappling with a deeply troubling rise in violent crime, one that has already claimed far too many lives. Now, fighting violent crime has long been a priority for the Justice Department as well. And we at the Justice Department have brought our full resources to bear on this issue, from the FBI, ATF, U.S. Marshals Service, and the DEA, who've participated in joint task forces to combat violence, to the Department's Violence Reduction Network. Now, our efforts to work closely with local authorities to fight violence in a number of ways began long before we opened this investigation, and they will continue during and after this investigation. And no one understands that better than Zach Farden. Under his outstanding leadership, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois has worked literally around the clock to tackle gun violence, gang cases, and other serious crimes afflicting this great city. And at the same time that Zach's office actively partnered with our Civil Rights Division on this pattern and practice investigation, the prosecutors in his office in 2016 charged the highest number of illegal firearm cases in any year since 2004. So the U.S. Attorney's Office here and federal investigative agencies have truly ramped up their efforts to help stem the recent rise in violence. But as I have seen firsthand from my community policing tour, that work is undermined if the community does not trust law enforcement. And that's why, in addition to increasing intelligence efforts and enhancing crime-fighting operations, we're also working with the city on a range of other critical initiatives, from youth outreach to counseling for the victims of crime. And these efforts will continue, and they will only be strengthened by the reforms that we are announcing today. Because successfully reducing and preventing violent crime requires a collaborative and trusting relationship between officers and residents. And where that relationship is broken, as it is in far too many of Chicago's neighborhoods, it's much harder to solve crimes and reduce violence. By making the changes necessary to bring constitutional, community-oriented policing to Chicago, the city and the police department will place itself in a much stronger position to combat the scourge of violence. And finally, I want to commend the people of Chicago for their patience and for their resilience throughout this long process. Community police relations is an especially difficult issue. It taps into long histories, deep beliefs, and strong opinions, and there's no lack of strong opinions here in Chicago. But it also forces us to honestly acknowledge the ways in which our society has fallen short in extending the protection of our laws to all Americans. It does not yield to swift or simple solutions. But meaningful change is never easy. The task of realizing the promise of our country has always been hard. And here in Chicago, thanks to the determination and the commitment of countless public officials, police officers, advocates, and citizens, we've taken the first step towards meaningful change and a brighter future. The people of this city have recognized that there is work to be done, and they've committed themselves to seeing that work through to the end. And the Department of Justice will stand beside you along the way. And I'm confident that when we are finished, when this review is finished and the changes are set in place, Chicago will be a stronger, a safer, and a more united city for everyone who calls it home. And at this time, I'll turn things over to Vinita Gupta, the head of the Civil Rights Division, who will say more about our findings. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Attorney General Lynch, and thank you also to U.S. Attorney Zach Farden. I am deeply grateful for the extraordinary work of the DOJ team of the Civil Rights Division and the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago that has worked tirelessly over the past 13 months. I also want to thank Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Superintendent Eddie Johnson for their cooperation during this investigation and for their commitment to reform. And I want to thank the people of Chicago, including the city's police officers, for engaging with the Justice Department over the last many months because you care about your city so much. Since we launched this investigation in December of 2015, the Justice Department has deployed our largest team ever in a policing pattern or practice case to conduct a thorough and fair investigation of the Chicago Police Department and Independent Police Review Authority. We reviewed thousands of documents and hundreds of force reports. We met with community members, city officials, and each of the police unions. We visited each of Chicago's 22 police districts, went on 60 ride-alongs, spoke to 340 members of the CPD, from command staff to line officers. We also met with over 90 community organizations and heard from more than 1,000 Chicagoans. And 11 independent subject matter experts, most of them current or former law enforcement officials, assisted with this investigation. As the Attorney General said, we found that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of using excessive force, including deadly force and non-deadly force. This pattern includes, for example, shooting at people who present no immediate threat and tasing people for not following verbal commands. This conduct doesn't only harm residents, it endangers officers. It results in avoidable deaths and injuries and trauma. And it erodes police community trust, trust that truly is the cornerstone of public safety. We found that this pattern of unconstitutional force is largely attributable to systemic deficiencies within the CPD and the city. We found that CPD does not adequately train its officers to use the appropriate amount of force. For example, we observed training on deadly force that used a video made decades ago with guidance inconsistent with both current law and internal policy. We found that CPD officers do not fully report their uses of force and that supervisors are not appropriately reviewing these uses of force. We found that Chicago's accountability systems are broken. Many complaints that should be investigated are not. And when investigations do occur, they are glacially slow and staffed by overworked and undertrained investigators who often fail to obtain basic witness statements and evidence. Officers are too rarely held accountable for misconduct, and when they are, discipline is unpredictable and ineffective. We found that CPD's approach to data collection on the use of force prevents CPD from spotting dangerous trends, responding with remedial training, and sharing information that would be useful to the public. We found that CPD's promotion systems are not transparent. And we found that CPD is failing to provide officers with the support that they need to deal with the stress and trauma of their jobs. We make these findings acutely aware that this is a time of significant challenge for Chicago residents and police officers. Gun violence has spiked, relations between police officers and residents is strained, and officer morale is suffering. But really, this context only heightens the importance and urgency of our findings. The failures that we identified and that we heard about from residents and officers alike have deeply eroded community trust, particularly in African American and Latino communities suffering the most from gun violence on Chicago's South and West Sides. These neighborhoods are the hardest hit by CPD's pattern of unlawful force and breakdown in the city's accountability systems. These breakdowns breed distrust and undermine police legitimacy in the very communities that need fair, proactive policing the most. Distrust of law enforcement makes residents unwilling to share information, and that makes it harder for officers to solve and prevent crimes. Addressing the deeply rooted police community distrust is a critical part of fighting crime and reducing violence in Chicago. Chicago's leaders, including especially the mayor and superintendent, of course, are aware of many of these problems, and to their credit, have been working to address them, such as revamping IPRA, bringing officers new de-escalation training, rolling out body cameras, and adopting a new policy on the release of videos, just among some.
You've been watching a news conference from Chicago where the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced the results of a 13-month investigation into the Chicago Police Department, and they found that the Chicago Police Department had a pattern of excessive force, exhibited a pattern of excessive force, and importantly, the Chicago Police Department has agreed, the City of Chicago, to enter a consent decree with the Justice Department to work on policing in that city going forward. It was also noted right there that the minority community in Chicago has been disproportionately hit by this use of excessive force. This all stemmed from the release of a video more than a year ago of Laquan McDonald being shot and killed by a police officer. I want to bring in Paul Callen, CNN legal analyst. And Paul, this was an interesting news conference right there. This was a 13-month civil rights investigation. They did find a pattern of excessive force. They did announce a consent decree. Explain to me what this all means.
The Justice Department has conducted a number of these evaluations of cities across the United States. They did it in Newark, New Jersey, for instance, where there were repeated complaints of excessive force by police departments. And what they do is they come in and they give recommendations as to how to improve policing, and maybe there'll be increased funding that will be found for the Chicago police, hopefully, as a result of this. But I have to say, John, I find it to be very, very unusual to hear this in Chicago at this time, because Chicago has one of the most brutal homicide rates in America, over 750 killings, I think, this year so far. Last year, I think there were 3,500 shootings in the mostly minority neighborhoods of Chicago. So a lot of people are saying that policing is not aggressive enough in Chicago. And I think that there will be many who will look at this report and say this is going to force the police to back off even more from aggressively policing the dangerous neighborhoods out of fear that they'll face federal sanctions of some kind if they're aggressive in policing.
let me just tell you what was said about this, because Loretta Lynch addressed that. First of all, she said the excessive force stemmed from deficient training and poor supervision, and she did note the rising number of homicides in Chicago, the plague of homicides in that city over the last year or two that has been on the rise, though not to record levels, but it's certainly been on the rise in a very alarming way. She says the pattern of excessive force has eroded trust in minority communities and has prevented people from coming forward with information that may help in investigations, may prevent more murders. So what they seem to be trying to do, Paul, was say that maybe all these things are tied up into one little package.
Yes, and you know, I think all of those points are quite legitimate. Having been a homicide prosecutor myself, I know that cooperation from the community in making cases against the bad guys is critical. And if you don't have the trust of the police and law enforcement officials, you cannot solve crime problems. But of course, on the other hand, you need a cooperative police force that's willing to...
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard. Fighting non-violently. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I still hope we are having some great weather in the city of Chicago. There's no doubt about it. Winter has not reared its ugly head. We are having some great weather, at least on this side of the town of Chicago, and I'm thinking it's probably all over the city. And I want to thank my guest once again, Clyde P. Riddles Brood, talking about his touring company, Touring Theater. That's interesting. I always wanted to get into theater, but somehow it didn't happen. Who knows? Maybe it will happen in the future. You know, I mean, I've said this 1,000 times before, folks. Do not let age stop you from doing anything that you want to do. You want to be an actor, be an actor. You want to be a singer, you be a singer. You want to be a radio or television host, be a radio or a television host. If you want to be a janitor, be a janitor. Be what you want to do. And like I was discussing, there's nothing greater than making money from what you love doing. That's great. I mean, sometimes people say, well, I can't believe I'm making money. It's something I enjoy doing. You know, and a lot of people out here, we are making a few pennies doing things that we hate, but we have to do them because we have to pay the bills. We got to feed the kids, got to pay for the car, we got to pay the mortgage. So, you know, we accept jobs and do jobs that we don't like. We don't like a supervisor. We can't stand the manager. Our coworkers are stabbing us in the back, running back and telling the supervisor everything. Do what you love doing. Stop wasting your time at a job that you hate. It doesn't make sense. If you don't like your job, I've heard people say, hey, wow, George, I love my job. Well, then good for you. But there's so many people out here who hate their jobs, who hate what they're doing. You know, they have to smile and grin through their teeth just so they don't want their employer to think that they have an attitude or something. And it's not right. I don't think anybody should be wasting their time doing something they hate doing, even if it pays the bills. Well, do it for a while, but then get out of it. You know, I mean, there's nothing like working for yourself, doing, calling your own shots, being your own boss, you know, stop doing what other people tell you to do and have people do what you want them to do. That's a great feeling. I mean, stop people from controlling you and you control other people within reason. When I say control, I mean within reason. I'm not talking about like a slave or anything, but within reason. I'm just basically saying do it for yourself. I've written a few pages, I believe, outlining this, and you can find it on Amazon.com. Do it for yourself. I think it's 99 cents or something. Anyway, I've written it about 4 or 5 years ago. I believe it still stands up today. But anyway, stop going at a job that you hate. Stop going at a job that you can't stand. And I mean, I've had jobs out in the private sector where, I mean, I would get up every morning, get dressed, shower and all this kind of thing. And it would just break my heart every time I walked through the door because I knew I didn't want to be there. I knew I didn't like some of the people that were there and they didn't like me. But everybody put on a show. Hi, George. Hey. Hey, Betty. Hey, John. Hey, Sue. It was a job. If you talk to a lot of people, they'll say it's not the work, it's the people. The work is fine. I have no problem with doing the job itself, but it's just the people around me that are awful. You know, so stop doing something you don't like. Stop going to a job that you just dread. Because it's not doing you any good. That's going to mess with your life expectancy. You're not going to live long. Anytime you are stressed at a job you don't like, anytime you go into a job you don't like, that plays with your body mechanism. You're not going to live long because it's negative. It's negative on your body. Do something that's positive where you're going to live longer. Do something that you love. What kind of talent do you have? What can you do? Find something, find your niche in life. Find what you want to do. Find what you need to do and do it and find what makes you happy. Stop doing what makes you unhappy. Do whatever makes you happy. Whatever make the people around you happy at seeing you doing the things that make you happy. If that makes sense. 347-857-1762. But basically, stop moaning and groaning about your job, about your life. You're young, you're vibrant, you're strong, you're talented. Get out there and do something with yourself, your life. You know, your family's going to back you up. Hopefully, if you don't have no support, then, you know, go out there and do it for yourself. You know, I say this every few days on the show. Do something for yourself because it's all about making the world a better place. You want to make the world a better place. Look at yourself and make a change in your behavior or in the way you do things. Being an entrepreneur, being in control, being the one who calls the shots is a dream. And we all love dreams, especially when they come true. So, you know, there is no need to be unhappy. There's no need to be sad. There's no need to feel lonely. If you are those things, it means that you just bring them on yourself. You don't have to be depressed. You don't have to feel as though your success means nothing. You don't have to feel guilty because you have money. You don't have to feel guilty because you're successful. You don't have to feel guilty because you're pretty and other people are not. That's BS. You know, you don't have to be lonely. There's so many places you can go to meet people, great people, wonderful people. You know, nobody has to be lonely unless they want to be. You got a lot of people who out here who wants to be lonely. They want to be left alone by themselves. If you try to say anything to them, they're going to bite your head off. Get away from me. You know, you get people like that, then you stay away from them. But everybody is not like that. You know, there's going to be people who are going to want to be with you. And maybe you can just help each other out. You know, you never know. You never know. But life's too short to be miserable. I guess that's the whole premise of what I'm trying to say. Life is too damn short to be miserable. Never, ever be miserable, because like I have just said, it will have some sort of effect on your life expectancy. You won't live too long. You know, being negative, sad, depressed, crying, and being in a disappointing situation, you're not going to live long because it's a negative situation. Put yourself in a positive situation where you can live to be as long as you possibly can and be happy. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I want to say this. I live in the state of Illinois, and I've said this 1,000 times on the show. We are 3 years without a budget. That means the state cannot spend money. So our public schools, public universities, public colleges, these places are about to be shut down because there's no money going through them. And the governor and the legislature in Illinois, they can't stand each other. And the Illinois is in the middle of this fight, which is ridiculous. And but you think about it. When you think about it, education is in trouble in the United States, period. I mean, we got this Secretary of Education, I believe her name is Betty DeVos. This woman don't know a book from a pen, a pencil. And Trump is cutting the budget on everything. He's cutting money away from everything. You know why he's cutting money? Because he needs to take that money from these vital programs like Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and other vital programs, infrastructure, whatever, science. He's taking all that funding from a lot of these sources in order to find the money to build a wall to block Mexicans from coming into America, well, coming over the border. What can I say? So he needs to cut. Remember how he promised and almost, you know, impelled it into our brains that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. That's all he said, was Mexico was going to pay for the wall, and his supporters fell for it. Mexico is not going to pay for no goddamn border wall. If there is going to be a wall, Americans are going to pay for it with a lot of social cuts in everything. Education. The Republicans do not think much of education, science, or any of that stuff. They do not think much of most of anything that Democrats think most of. Okay. So he's going to be cutting a lot of, he's got to get the money from somewhere. He's promised to build a wall, and I think he's going to. But a lot of programs, a lot of people going to suffer in the midst of it. There's going to be government layoffs at a lot of these airports. And that money's going to go towards a wall, making it unsafe at the airports where terrorists can get in, or people will be able to get on board a plane with a gun, because a lot of those TSA agents will not have a job. There won't be anybody there to screen you, because these people are going to be laid off because the government cuts, federal cuts. Why? Because they want to take that money to build a wall. You may build a wall and keep the illegals out, but hey, wow, taking money from vital programs that are essential to protecting America against terrorism, ingrown or foreign, is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But, you know, we got a bunch of ridiculous people in the White House. These people don't give a damn about anything. I think they're learning on the job. I think a lot of them are learning on the job. And like I said before, Republicans are controlling everything. So, and the Democrats can talk and disagree and go against a lot of things that the Republicans are putting forth. But that's about it. They cannot do anything more than that. They can't get anything passed. They can't do this or do that, because they are not in control. The Republicans are in control. So therefore, since the Democrats in Congress can't do anything to change things or to change the minds of some of these Republicans, it will take the people of the United States to do the changing. We have to rise up to do the work that they can't do or won't do. It takes protests. It's going to take rallies. It's going to take a lot of this stuff. This is why a lot of these Republicans around the country are trying to come up with bills to pass legislation to outlaw rallies and protest, or to just have people, if you're protesting in the middle of the street, they're going to pass a law that you can get ran over because you're protesting in the middle of the street. For years, I have also been against people protesting in the streets, blocking traffic and blocking your way into a store, you know, just blocking you, keeping you from. I thought that was crazy. And I'm against that myself. I mean, if you're in your car and you're trying to get someplace, but you can't get someplace because a thousand people are in front of you blocking the streets off just because they want you to pay attention to what their grievances are. I think that's unfair. I really think that's unfair. But I don't think outlawing rallies and protests is a good thing. I mean, in the Constitution, it says totally free to assemble, but you got Republicans, they can also change these laws to be the laws that they want. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. My number is 347. We're just about off the air. We got about three, four more minutes, maybe 3 minutes left into the show, but we're just about off, folks, and we're going to be off for the next 3 days. We won't be back until Monday. Monday. I'm going to do some writing, some editing, a lot of this kind of thing, and, you know, just relax for a little while until Monday. Monday, starting next week, we have a whole slew of guests that are going to appear on the show. That should be fun. That should be great. I hope you'll be here by then. All right, we're going to do this, and we'll be right back, and we're going to say...
Help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone ever saw? Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Monday. We will be back this Thursday. So join me on Monday. I'm going to be doing a podcast.